If you will get your Bibles and turn to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel and his three friends are now part of the wise men group, and there is an issue that comes up with King Nebuchadnezzar. He starts to have a dream that obviously is very vivid, and it's bothering him. So we'll start here in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 2. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. So, this dream, I don't know if he had it multiple times or over a series of nights, but regardless, whatever it was, this was such a strong dream that it woke him up out of his dead sleep. And so this was really bothering him. So, verse 2. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. Okay, now, this is all of the wise men except Daniel and his three friends. They are left out of this. And we'll find out this later on in the chapter that Daniel has to inquire what's going on. So, Kaufman's comment as far as why Daniel and his three friends were left out, which does seem strange here because just previously, upon graduation of this wise man school that they were in, Daniel and his three friends were shown to be 10 times wiser and could answer the questions that the king gave them 10 times better than any other wise man over the whole kingdom. So you would have thought that the king would have deferred to the wisest first and had Daniel and his three friends to come before him even first, or at least part of the group. But Kaufman's comment on why he didn't is he was deferring to the experience, the aging and experience, instead of the what probably he considered youth and inexperience of Daniel and his three friends. So he's going to his old standbys here, and he's excluded Daniel and his three friends. So they are not privy to anything right here that's going on over these next several 10 or so, about the next 10 verses. So all of these wise men are brought before the king, except Daniel and his three friends. And verse 3, and the king said to them, I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. So he's anxious to understand and know what this dream means. And so, verse 4, then the Chaldeans, and the various commentators talked about this, Chaldeans, basically, this is just a synonym for the wise men. So, then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation. Well, they were wanting the easy way out, and they were going to deceive the king. Now, the king is not going to be deceived on this, and he calls them out on this. But he's on top of his game here, and he is going to force them to tell him what he has dreamed first, and then he will know that if you can tell me what I've dreamed, then you will be able to tell me what it means, and I will be able to believe it. So the king is very smart in this manner. And verse 5. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces and your houses shall be made an ash heap. So he's going to kill all the wise men if they don't tell him what he dreamed and then what it means. Now, if he hadn't put this in, that you have to tell me what I dreamed then anything they told them, and there would, if there were 50 wise men in this gathering, then there would have been 50 different meanings that they would have come up with. It was just endless. And so King Nebuchadnezzar would not have been able to have any confidence. So that was the threshold, the barrier that he was forcing these wise men to be able to cross in order for him to be able to realize that the meaning was accurate. Okay, and he's going to kill them. So this is very, very serious. Verse 6. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation. Okay, now as we fast forward through the chapter, we know that Daniel does tell him exactly what he dreamed and what that dream meant. And then King Nebuchadnezzar is an honorable king, unlike a lot of kings in history and a lot of politicians, not honorable. King Nebuchadnezzar kept his word, and I'll just flip over to verse 48, to where he holds his keeps his word here. So at the end of the chapter of Daniel 2, verse 48, then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made Daniel ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. And then on verse 49, then Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So he kept his word, and the one that told him what dream he dreamed and what it meant, he gave him, Daniel, gifts, rewards, and great honor. So that's an honorable king that kept his word, and he wouldn't have had to. It's easy to say that you're going to do something for someone if they will do something in return, and whenever they do that, then it's easy to forget that. But that is not what happened here. King Nebuchadnezzar rewarded Daniel with gifts, rewards, and great honor. Verse 7. Okay, back to these wise men. They answered again and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation." So we will make up anything to save our lives, but you're going to have to tell us what you dreamed. Verse 8, the king answered and said, "I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm." So this gain time, they're trying to kill time is what they're trying to do. They're trying to get past a time to when he will no longer be so angry or belligerent, and to where he's not going to want to kill them. So they are stalling for time here. And he realizes that that's what he's doing, and he calls them out on that and said, "You're just stalling for time, and I'm not going to let you stall for time." So verse 9, "If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation." So he knows that's the only way he'll be able to trust what they tell him the dream means, is if they can tell him the dream. And this phrase, "you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words to me until the time has changed," I understand that to be that they're going to they're colluding amongst themselves to tell him anything that he might desire to hear until the winds of time have changed, or until he changes his mind that he's not going to kill them. So they're just trying to stall, and who knows, probably in the past, they probably lied to him before, and he doesn't want to get into this. He knows these wise men, And either him or his dad have probably gone through things like this in the past, to where they'll tell them anything that they want to hear so they don't get killed. And he's not going to take that this time. He's going to go ahead and kill them if they can't do this impossible thing. And that is now going to come up from these wise men in verse 10. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter." And that is true. "Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean." And it was true. There was no man on earth that could tell him what he dreamed, that could look inside his mind and know what it was. Only a divine being knows this. In verse 11, "It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh." Okay, they understand that it's going to take a divine being. Now, they have a flawed view of polytheistic, idolatrous gods. But Daniel is going to take this saying, not the polytheistic form, but in verse 28, he's going to come before King Nebuchadnezzar and say, "There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days." So, where these wise men, these pagan wise men, say only gods who do not dwell in flesh can reveal this, Daniel tells him, "It is the one true and living God that is in heaven that has given you this dream, and he has let you know about what's going to happen in future days, and ultimately it's going to be about when God is going to establish his kingdom." Verse 12, "For this reason the king was angry and very furious, and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon." He did not like that reply that, and I am assuming probably in the past they had told him that the gods talk to them and that they know what the gods are wanting him to do on various things about a battle or make any decisions. I know that that definitely happened in the future in the Greek and the Roman times. They would consult these soothsayers whatever they were called, and to determine to go to war or what an outcome would be. And they would say, "Oh, this is what the gods told me." And so I'm assuming that this is what they'd done in the past, but they revealed the truth here, that there was nobody, no God was going to reveal anything to them. So he just says, "Okay, you can't do it. That's fine. You're going to be destroyed." And so, verse 13, "So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them." So he's already killing the older wise men, and it's coming time now for Daniel and his companions, and they don't know anything about this at this time. And so then Daniel's going to have to inquire, and he petitions the king for a delay to pray to God, which it's not stated, but obviously the king grants this to Daniel and his three friends. And we will, Lord willing, we will cover that for next week, starting in verse 14.